You are listening to a sermon by Shelley Stearns, recorded on Sunday, July 17, 2011, at the Point Grey Inter-Mennonite Fellowship in Vancouver, British Columbia. The opinions expressed by the speaker are not necessarily those of the church. This recording is licensed for personal use by individuals only and may not be copied, broadcast, or redistributed without the prior permission of the church board. For more information, please visit our website at www.pgimf.org.
Well, it's lovely to be here this morning. Thank you for inviting me, and it is a strange thing. I'm not sure that this is my first church to actually been invited to speak at, so it's both daunting and very exciting, so come with me as we go along. It's so fun to actually come to a church that really knows how to sing. I think more people would sing hymns if everyone could sing parts like you guys do. I think everyone would understand the joy of the depth that happens when you actually can hear the bass and the tenor and the alto and lovely soprano lines. So thank you for all of your singing. I wanted to get up and play my violin during Yays Your Joy. So, thank you for singing so well. This morning we're going to talk about the woman who anoints Jesus, and I have been thinking of her as the woman who doesn't have a name, or the unnamed woman. And this is who she is in both Matthew and Mark's account of her. And if we can set the context of this passage, we see that Jesus is having dinner in the home of Simon the leper in Bethany, when an unnamed woman comes in and anoints Jesus. I mean, this is quite a shocking thing. I mean, have you ever had dinner with someone and all of a sudden you have a strange person come in and no one seems to say anything about this woman in this passage, wherein she just comes in, opens up a jar of nard, and pours it over the head of Jesus? This is not a normal thing to have happen. So this is quite an astounding story. And if we think about also where this is placed in the overall story of who Jesus is, we see that Jesus is in the midst of Holy Week. We see it that way now. But the triumphal entry has already happened. This story happens. It's quite a busy week for him. And then right after this, Judas goes out and he goes to talk to the Pharisees to betray Jesus. He agrees to betray Jesus right after this. And then the Last Supper is the story after the telling of how Judas goes to the Pharisees. So the order tells us of the timing of this gesture of this woman. Also in the telling, this woman is unknown and unnamed, yet she is remembered for what she does. It is the act itself that names her and identifies her for us. And with that, I would like to share a painting with you. And so I hope everyone can see this. It is on your program or on your bulletin. And I just love this painting. So I'm gonna in some ways talk about this story through this painting. This is done by a French painter named Archibus, and evidently that's a kind of a tender name that his students have given to him, and he actually signs all of his paintings now with Archibus in the corner. And my friend Kirsten and her husband Greg actually came across Archibus because they were living in France at the time, and there's a church nearby where they were living, and a lot of his paintings and sculptures are in that church. And it's kind of in the Chartreuse area of France, up in the Alps. And so if you find yourself in France, you might want to visit the church, because his paintings are quite stunning. And this particular painting is a part of a 21-piece polytiptych, which is one of those words that I have to practice saying, polytiptych, because there's so many different paintings in it. And it tells the story of Holy Week. It tells the story of Jesus' passion and his resurrection. And unfortunately, we don't have time to kind of look through the entire polytiptych because it's really quite amazing. Actually, I think the resurrection painting in this is one of my favorite paintings from the entire. So if you find yourself online looking for Archibus, try to find the resurrection scene of this, because it's quite stunning. The next painting in the polytiptych, which I want to share as well, if you can go to the next. This is called The Messianic Road, and I think it's quite stunning because in some ways it's this extension of the pouring of the nard over the head of Jesus. And so in some ways we have to keep this in the back of our mind, how Archibus is actually translating this story for us. And he puts beside this the Isaiah 43 passage that was read earlier on, this idea that, see, I am doing a new thing, streams in the wasteland. Like that, yeah, feel free to move. There are lots of seats over here. So it's this idea that he's actually putting within the context of the story, not only the passion story, but also this idea that in this anointing, there's something new being broken open. There's something new happening. God is actually saying, through the actions of this unnamed woman, that behold, something new is coming. So one of the first things I want to talk about in the midst of this, and you can go back, go to the painting again. As we look at this painting, it's safe to say that Archibus is interpreting this story in a particular sort of way. And the first thing that really strikes me about this painting is the idea of the face. You have in this painting, first, her face, but also the face of Jesus. There's something in how we encounter Christ in this painting. So there's such a prominence of their faces. So I have to think about that embedded in the Hebrew mindset, there's this idea that when we come face to face, or when we see faces, and especially when we seek the face of God, we're talking about a seeking after intimacy. Something is known as we know the face of someone. And it's also significant that in Hebrew, the word for face is always plural. It's never singular. And that's not because you can't have a singular face, but it's because the face is so complex that it's always. And so as we seek after, we see something of the fullness of someone. And so I was thinking about Numbers 6, the blessing that is given, that says, when Moses is told, put this blessing over the people. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. And there's something in this painting that I go back to that idea that the Lord has lifted up his countenance on the people by sending Christ to us. So there's both intimacy, there's also the presence of God with us. Because the pious heart seeks after the face of God. We see this throughout the Psalms. So Psalm 41, Psalm 27. We also see that those who are in danger seek after God's face for safety, like in Psalm 80. But his face is also a means of judgment, that if God's face is turned toward us, or even if God's face is turned away, judgment either comes or judgment is taken away. And then we have asked for God's, when we're lamenting, we also ask for the presence of God, to see God's face, that he might turn toward us and we might be comforted. So God's face means justice. God's face means presence. God's face means love. And then Paul, in the New Testament, talks about the face in terms of the fullness of knowledge. In 1 Corinthians 13:12, we hear Paul talk about, then we shall see face to face. And in this, we will be fully known, and we will know God fully in the encounter with Christ. I think we see something of this here. Even though she is not named particularly, she is seen and she is known by Christ. Christ, in this moment, honors her, and he receives her offering, and she reflects the glory of Christ. And I have to think about Colossians 1:15 as well, and thinking about Christ as the very icon of the fullness of God, and this idea that the face of Christ actually reveals to us the fullness of who God is. And again, I have to also think about Karl Barth. who's a Swiss theologian, and he talks about the function of the face of Christ to reveal the fullness of God to us. And he says, no other speaks at the same time of the human suffering of the true God and the divine glory of the true human. This is the function of the face of Jesus Christ alone. And so there's something here, as she is anointing Jesus, we also see fully the face of Christ. She is participating in this revelation of who Jesus Christ is to us in this moment. The second thing I notice about the painting is that she is wearing a nun's habit. Did you notice that?
Yep.
So she's wearing a wimple and a full. And in this, we can see that because of the expense of the nard, chances are, because it's a year's worth of wages, chances are this was her dowry. And so there's something about that she's actually giving herself and almost wedding herself to Christ in this moment. So there's something in the personal cost of what she's doing, but there's also something in that she's giving up her position in society for the sake of this anointing. And the disciples object to this expense and extravagance because they focus on the nard itself. But Jesus in this moment focuses on the offering of the woman. She was offering her position in society and her means of support. And she's doing this in order to prepare Christ for his burial. This is not an act of, this is an act of performative prophecy that she is doing. And though she remains unnamed, she is remembered and placed as one of the prophets because of what she does. Remember, she comes into the house purposely for this moment. And in this, I'm actually reminded of the prophet Jeremiah, that on the eve of the exile, that Jeremiah is commanded by God to do what? He goes out and he buys a plot of land. They're about to leave the land, and this extravagant act of going and purchasing a piece of land and making sure that he actually puts the deed in a pot and buries it someplace where it can be found again, because it was telling the people of Israel that though you will go into exile, you will come back, you will return. And in that returning, that land will be bought again, homes will be bought and sold, that even though you're going into exile, there will always be a return for you. Now, in the midst of that, I think of the nard as a similar kind of foreshadowing of the coming death and burial of Jesus. And we can think of this in a sense of the exile of Jesus. That Jesus actually becomes exile for us. He goes into exile as he dies, descends into hell, and waits for a resurrection. But this act of anointing is actually a foreshadowing, and it prefigures the glorification of Christ. As Christ, the Lord of all creation, and he is the one who was raised above all names. That not only in the resurrection, but also in the ascension, that Christ is raised above all things in the world, and he is made Lord of all of the creation. So in a sense, the nameless woman names Jesus as the Christ, the anointed one, the one who will return from the exile of death and burial and return as the risen one, the first fruit of all the dead. And Paul in Colossians 1:18 says that this return from the dead assures that Christ has the supremacy in all things. So here she is, anointing him and prefiguring for us that this is who this person is. This is the one who will come and reconcile all things in himself. And the final thing I see in this painting comes from the context of the story itself. She was moved by the Spirit to come to this house and anoint Jesus. And in this movement in the Spirit, she is led to Jesus. I think she was also enacting a primary principle of spiritual formation that Paul articulates in 2 Corinthians 3:17 through 18. And that verse is, now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. And we all, who with unveiled faces, and I just see this, in that her unveiled, and we who with unveiled faces contemplate the Lord's glory and are being transformed into his image with ever-increasing glory, which comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. And there's something in this that I see, that as she contemplates the glory of Christ, she also reflects the glory of Christ in this moment. I believe that Christ is transformed as he willfully and willingly receives her gift, her extravagant gift of the nard. And she too is transformed by the glory of Christ in this moment. And we too are called to follow the Spirit and to be transformed in our encounter with Christ. So in some ways, we are called to be like this woman, and to name Christ, and in that moment, we also are named as the children of God. So thank you.